Zuckerberg's probably about 40 now, but like, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, I would have trusted him because he's got so much deep experience into what he's doing and in the space, right? So experience is the trump card. Experience is always the trump card.
All right, Dr. Dinnan, we are back again for another episode. I think this is our sixth episode of Thought Wave. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Well, welcome to Thought Wave, where we discuss tips, tricks, hacks for audience builders.
Hold on. I'm trying to live blue sky this. You got to slow down.
Oh, is this going to happen every time?
I can't type fast enough. Live blue sky doesn't quite have the brand of live tweet.
Wait, one sec. What is blue sky? What are you talking about?
It's the new Twitter. Didn't you hear?
No. What's going on with this? I thought there already was a Twitter, or now X.
So Jack Dorsey's blue sky, but everyone trying to figure out where to go. And apparently, since the election stuff, a lot of people have left X, and I guess blue sky is a thing. They've gotten a whopping like 3 million new followers, which is.
I did see a headline about this, and wasn't it? It went from 3 to like 14 or something like that.
Yeah, that's big, right? So the question is like, do we chase the new thing, right? We're going to be on Instagram. We got our TikTok content, but like, and we've got our YouTube content, our Facebook content, our LinkedIn content. Do we also need blue sky content? And here's the thing: I'm wondering. I guess like this is a question I feel like every entrepreneur deals with. Like, what platforms do they need to be on? And something new comes along. Do you got to chase that new thing? Like, that's a tough question. Do you pivot to that new thing?
That is a really great question. And this is a thought wave. This is why we're here today. So I get asked that question a lot, and I'm sure as a professor of entrepreneurship, you probably get asked this question a lot too. But when should you pivot your company or your idea? When should you chase the new thing versus when should you stay focused? How do you answer that?
Oh gosh. Did we finish the, I feel like I interrupted our intro. Let's start over.
We should run a tight ship here. Are you ready? Here we go. Welcome to Thought Wave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience builders, entrepreneurs, and people who just want to do things. Dr. Dinnan, what do we do? Do you pivot? Do you not? How can you tell?
Yeah, so my experience, I like to break this down. I feel like there's three types of pivots. There's the offensive pivot, where you see something important happening in the market and you're going after it. There's the defensive pivot, where you got to protect yourself in some way. And then there's what I like to call the squirrel pivot, where you're freaking squirrel. You just like turn. There's an what's that? Ooh, what's that? Ooh, that looks exciting. I feel like most entrepreneurs do the squirrel pivot. And that's the one you can't do. But the other two are important, and we should talk about those. Let's talk about them.
All right. So you've got three types of pivots. You've got your offensive pivot, your defensive pivot, and the squirrel pivot. Offensive pivot, what is that?
All right. So offensive pivot, think about when you are a kind of a market expert and you can, what is that Gretzky quote? It's the, don't skate to where the puck is, skate to where the puck is going. It's when the more you become an expert in a space, in a market, then you start to see what's going to be happening. And really smart founders that I've worked with before, you'll sit with them and they'll say, we're doing this now, but I know this isn't going to be as relevant 3-5 years from now. And we're going to basically, we're doing fine, we're making money now, but if we don't move, if we're not thoughtful about it, then someone else is going to come along and eat our lunch. And so I think that's the offensive pivot. It's seeing how the market is moving. And because you're such an expert in that space, in that market, you are jumping on top of it.
Interesting. So this is calling to mind, I saw something about an Apple rumor. Everybody loves Apple rumors. Okay. And apparently they're considering getting back into or starting a foothold in the TV game. So we're not talking about the set-top boxes. We're actually talking about the physical TV sets. So in essence, what you're talking about is an offensive pivot is they must see this as a strategic imperative for them to start making these devices in order to either maintain or grow a foothold in the consumer electronics space. Is that right?
You have to imagine a TV is still the center of a household. No matter how many kind of tablets and things like that start to show up, and now they kind of function a little differently than they did 20, 30 years ago in terms of how they exist at the center of that household. But heck, even when I had a dinner party the other night, that makes me sound so adult and fancy. I had a dinner party with my wife and some family.
You're very adult.
Our kids were at some sort of thing. But the TV was on and it had, Pandora playing in the background, right? Like it's still the kind of this central thing that sits there. And so if I'm Apple, right, and I'm thinking like, where are my markets that I haven't gotten into? That's kind of your home automation, your home, kind of your core, the heart of your home. It's strange that they're not in there when I think about it.
It's a really good point. And if you think about some of the, sci-fi type movies that you watch, you notice that all the windows really are TV screens and the walls in the house are TV screens. And of course, we haven't gotten there yet, thankfully. I can't imagine what that would do to my brain and my eyes if that was the case. But it does seem like a step that a company like Apple would want to take ultimately, because that feels like a very luxury, consumer-y, electronic-y thing that somebody like Apple would want to do.
Right. And it kind of pushes to other examples I think of this kind of offensive pivot. Well, probably one of the best examples is Zuckerberg, right? It is Meta, becoming Meta, right? And they're saying, oh, okay, well, that was his move to the metaverse, which I think people are maybe saying wasn't so successful. Though, at some level of scale, he's probably right, but that's the hard thing about skating to where the puck is going, is that you don't know when you're going to get there, and so if you get there way too early, then you're in trouble. And I think that's what happened to him. But historically, Meta has been great at these kind of offensive pivots, right? So when Snapchat comes along, and they introduce stories into Instagram, and just kind of and make sure that Snapchat can't eat their lunch, and then TikTok comes along, and they introduce Reels. I remember everyone giving Zuckerberg so much crap for, he's just a copier. But you know what? Instagram is stronger than ever because Zuckerberg said, hey, we're gonna do this. We're gonna pivot. We're gonna make this big offensive pivot. And they're kind of doing it with Threads, right? So it's coming along and saying, hey, let's go and this is why I think the blue sky stuff is maybe a little overblown, right? Is okay, cool. Congratulations on your 15 million users. And Zuck is sitting there like, but I have 275 million over here on Threads, monthly actives. And I think Twitter has something like 250 or 65 million daily actives. And daily and monthly are very different things, but your 15 million blue sky users. You know what, Chris?
What?
Here should be our challenge. We should try to become the best podcast on blue sky. What do you think?
I think that's a decent goal, right? By when? It needs to be a SMART goal, measurable, whatever the other part of the acronym is, time-bound, reasonable.
I wonder how many podcasts, it might not be that high, I wonder how many people are like, we are launching a podcast and we are going to promote it on Blue Sky. This might be easy. We might be able to do this, Chris.
I think there's some opportunity here. Is this an example of an offensive pivot for us, or is this an example of a squirrel pivot?
Maybe the example of a bad idea.
It could also be that.
And you have to be careful, right? Because I guess this is where an offensive pivot and a squirrel pivot can look similar, right? Because squirrel pivot, let's just talk about that real quick. It's the, everyone's talking about AI and I have this company that's not AI, but I'm going to do, but I'm going to go AI because everyone's talking about AI now. We could go back to, everyone's talking about blockchain, so now I'm going to go do a blockchain company. And there's always like the cool new thing that everyone wants to chase. That's the squirrel pivot. And that's dangerous because by the time everyone's chasing it, you're behind functionally anyway. And you're not an expert. You're not knowledgeable in that space versus the offensive pivot. Again, when Zuckerberg says, if TikTok's going to come and they're going to eat our lunch, we need to open this whole new feature set and create almost this a whole new platform inside of Instagram. He's not an idiot. He has been the king of the social media space for two decades. And if he says this is the thing we need to be on top of, he's not doing it from a position of, ooh, that's exciting. He's doing it because he understands the space better than anyone else.
It's a really good point, because one thing that I see in companies, when we're doing our consulting and we're helping entrepreneurs grow their businesses and figure out their revenue and sales path, one thing that I oftentimes we'll see is that the founder or the CEO will continue to monkey with the pitch before they get any real signal on whether or not they're in the right direction. And it's that constant changing that doesn't allow you to actually have any firm foundation on which to build that consensus that you need in order to say, this is the right direction. Now, you can't test yourself into everything all the time, but you do need to consistently move down a path in order to get some amount of data before you choose which direction you're going to take, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, you know, the value of experience comes in. Yeah, there's a stat that always blows my mind is, you know, and it's questionable, it's debatable, the stat, but do you know what Harvard did a study. The average age of a successful entrepreneur. Do you know what the average age of a successful entrepreneur is?
I think I do, actually. I think it's mid-40s, right?
Yeah. And so there's some debatability about whether or not this study is right or wrong. But here's the thing. The debate isn't, you know, is it 42 or is it actually 22? It's like, is it 42 or could it, you know, maybe be like the 30s? But the point is, it is not 22. And this is important because when I was 22, I thought I freaking knew everything. I'm just going to sound like the old man. Oh, kids, you think you know everything, but you don't. But I didn't realize how true that was until I've gotten older. And by the way, it's not because I know everything now. It's because I've been exposed to so many things I don't know when I think I know everything that I feel like I have more humility to be like, you know what? I'm probably an idiot. it's like I've been blindsided so many times that I realize I'm going to get blindsided again, and that's okay. I'm an idiot. And I just didn't realize that when I was 22. But the other side of that is, you know, I've got 20 years more experience than I had. And so that experience really helps me to understand things at a much higher level. So there's a reason successful entrepreneurs tend to be in their 40s rather than in their 20s. They just have experience. And this is what we're talking about when we talk about pivot. If you are, you know, pivoting every which way and you're in your 20s, that's probably because you don't have experience. And so I wouldn't trust those pivots. Heck, I might not trust that initial instinct of whatever you started with. But if you're, you know, 40 or again, you know, well, Zuckerberg's probably about 40 now, but like, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, I would have trusted him because he's got so much deep experience into what he's doing and in the space, right? So experience is the trump card. Experience is always the trump card.
I love that. And what's great about it too is it's highly correlated with age. Experience obviously highly correlated with age, but it doesn't have to be, meaning you could have those folks that are making YouTube channels in their basement like you and I like to talk about in terms of the content creator game, and they've been talking about, you know, shoes and doing shoe unboxing since they were like 10 years old. By the time they're 18, 19, 20, they've got a really good read on what those dynamics are that are influencing that space that they're in. So they could probably identify correctly when and if they need to make a pivot in that situation.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing it makes me think about, and I'd love to pick your brain on this, like, it occurs to me that you can optimize for experience. How could you get experience quicker, for lack of a better word, right? Like if you're thoughtful about it, right, you can shorten the time it takes to get experience.
Love it. Okay. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten from a mentor of mine was don't figure it out, find out. And what he was really saying there was you need to go to people who have been there, and as opposed to trying to solve the problem on your own and figure it out, you should go find out. You should ask somebody who's been there before you or has been in an analogous business that can give you some insights into your current situation. So I think that's one area that is important. I think another one is reading. And a lot of people don't read a lot anymore, but one thing that I think is important about consuming books over, let's say, a podcast or short form video, social media video, is there's a lot of deliberate thought that goes into crafting an argument in a book. And so more often than not, of course, there's garbage books out there, but more often than not, the person who's writing the book has done a thoughtful job of doing the research, crafting the argument, and laying it all out there. And so reading books is a really great way to get out ahead, to get that experience more quickly.
That's great. Those are two really great things. And, you know, what they make me think of is we have to remember experience costs. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a reason why if you're hiring a consultant, right, you know, and you're going to get that experience, like it's basically what you're doing is you're paying for a shortcut. In fact, you know, I guess a lot of people hire us as consultants. And so what they're hiring for is, well, you know, we charge a good chunk of change, but what they're getting in us is, you know, if it's taken me, you know, I've been teaching, for example, I've been teaching social marketing for 10 years. I've been like exploring, studying, trying to understand the space, get better in the space for a decade. And if you hire me, I'm going to come in and I'm going to take that decade and I'm going to get you in, you know, in a year to what it took me a decade to get to. And yeah, it's going to cost you money to get there, but you're hiring experience. You're paying for the experience. And the most valuable asset is time, right? So if you can get that quicker with money and you have the resources to get it with money, then get it with money. Do it.
Yeah. So one, I love that point. It's a great point. And there is a very creative way that I've seen entrepreneurs actually get that experience. And one was at my last company where they would actually bring in advisors and give them advisor equity in the company. And that advisor would then meet with us on a regular basis in order to walk us into accounts, teach us what they had learned about their time within the industry that we were playing in. And I feel like a lot of founders, a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't think that way anymore, where you could trade just a little bit of equity in the form of options for this really great expert that can help guide you along your path. And there's almost, you know, there's a huge pot of options usually people have to be able to play with. And it can be very inexpensive. I mean, I think the common grant was about, you know, 5 to 10,000 options granted per person who would come in and help. And they would legitimately get us into these deals and teach us things that saved us a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of energy. And it was far outweighed the amount of money that was lost, quote, from giving away those options.
You have to be willing to spend time in entrepreneurship. You have to be willing to spend money in entrepreneurship to save time. And it's a really hard mentality to get around, because usually if you're an entrepreneur and you start when you're young and you're scrapping, you don't have a lot of money, the most precious asset feels like it's money, and it really never is. And so the more you can optimize buying time with money, do it. And this is why this is a huge mistake I made as a young entrepreneur. Is I remember the first time I raised venture capital, and we were so proud of ourselves, our ability to stretch out our money. We're hoarding the money, and we're still doing a lot of the things that we used to be doing before we raised venture capital, the time intensive things. And eventually one of my mentors, he's like, "Why aren't you spending money?" I was like, "Well, because we got to keep our runway as long as possible." He's like, "You idiot. I can get you more money. I can't get you more time. And you're not spending, you're spending all your time on this, and so you're not growing as fast. You just use the money I gave you. I gave you the money so that you could not have to do that." And unfortunately, he didn't tell me till too late, because I was like, I was very proud of this. I was doing everything, and you know, that company failed because I was not spending the money I had, because I thought the money was the valuable thing. So yeah, don't love the money too much. I know it's tempting, but that's not the most valuable asset. It's always time.
It's always time. And in that, what you're making me think of really is the last one of the pivots that we haven't really talked about yet, which is the defensive pivot. And I feel like that question tends to be raised when runway is running out, or there's some kind of big competitor in the space that has launched a, you know, new feature or something like that. And you feel like, oh no, we're going to get crushed. So let's go into that. What is a defensive pivot, and how is it different from the offensive pivot or the squirrel pivot?
So now I'm hearing it, and you even said, "Oh, competitor launched a new feature, we're gonna get crushed." And so then in my examples to Meta, maybe those seem like defensive pivots. But here's why I would. So let me justify why I would consider, you know, what Meta did by rolling out Reels being a kind of an. You know what? I can admit when I'm maybe a little wrong. Maybe the better explanation here, the better example is. Reels is the defensive pivot, whereas Threads is the offensive pivot, right? So let's back up the tape, everyone. If you thought I was an idiot when I was talking, but I'm not going to try to justify myself. This is a learning moment, friends, is that you can be wrong and it's okay. And, you know, rather than keep like being that, you know, and just trying to pretend you're right, I'm gonna say I screwed up in my language here. I screwed up. So Reels is a great example of the defensive pivot. There's a big competitor coming in, and if we don't move, if we don't protect ourselves, we're going to be screwed because the market is moving this way. Let's move in there and grab it. So defensive pivot, take everything I said before about reels and stories and just cut and paste here. And we should be, I think we're done with the podcast.
I don't think so, because I bet you a lot of people out there are wondering, like, all right, if I was in your shoes, I bet you we have a lot of people who are thinking right now, you know, I'm in a dire situation. I'm running out of capital. I'm running out of money, and I need to do something. I need to throw a Hail Mary and figure out what I'm going to do next. How do you know when, if you don't just keep digging, you're going to hit that gold versus like, I'm sorry, now is the time, you got to go.
This kind of, where is the gold? And, you know, and it was that persistence. You know, one of the kind of tropes around entrepreneurship is you got to be persistent. Persistence is the key to success in entrepreneurship. And it's a really problematic trope because, of course, that's also can cause you to waste a lot of time. And part of it is you just don't know. So here's what I always tell my entrepreneurs I work with. It's that how you know whether or not to keep going isn't some sort of objective measure of success. It's about making sure you are clear in understanding your goals, having a clear North Star. Because when you know what that goal is, you can then look at the data and say, hey, am I still moving towards my goal? If yes, keep going. If not, you know, cut and run. It's time to go. And I think that's the better way of saying it. So, and I know that's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but be very clear in your goals, and you know, in your company's goals, your personal goals, and, you know, and then even goals within kind of subsets like our sales goals, our marketing goals, or whatever. And if, as long as you're clear on your goals, then you can objectively say, well, here are goals. Here's how we're hitting them. Here's what the numbers look like. Are we getting there? And if, you know, if yes, cool, let's keep going. If no, that tells us this is probably time to pivot.
I love that. And I asked you an impossible question, because there's no way that you or I here could ever say, yeah, you should definitely pivot, like go, right? Unless we had some serious knowledge about the inner workings of the industry and that person's business and all of that kind of stuff. But what you're saying here about being clear about your goals and making sure that you understand where you are going seems like a very important thing to help guide that decision. And I would say I've seen a bunch of really great entrepreneurs. There's one woman in my network. She's an incredible entrepreneur locally here. And she made the difficult decision to shut down her company, actually, with, you know, with a significant amount of money in the bank from investors that she ultimately returned to them, which they were super grateful for, as you might imagine, because she saw that there wasn't going to be a market for the service that she was offering anymore now that AI was coming out and making everyone better coders. So it was just like, it was a company killer for her. It was an existential issue for her fundamentally. Whereas I've seen some of these other folks who have pivoted two or three times because they realized that what was going on with their company was somewhat sticky. The customers kind of liked it, but they didn't like it enough, and they weren't growing fast enough in order to outrun their burn rate. And so they made the difficult decision to pivot into another market and shut down a multi-million dollar run rate within their company of a product that they said, you know what, we're just going to be throwing good money after bad. $3 million in ARR may look great, but ultimately it's going to be unsustainable if we keep investing in it. It's not going to get us to where we need to go. And so, you know, they shut that down, invested in another line and another pivot, and were able to sell their company for, you know, $100 million plus at the end of the day. So it was this very, you know, two very different ideas, but one thing in common. They both ended up shutting down revenue that was coming in because it wasn't strategic, or the long-term potential of that business wasn't going to be there.
It's hard to say no to money. Money is just so exciting. But at the end of the day, again, this comes down to the idea that time is your most valuable asset. So if you're wasting time on something that you know is a dead end, then who cares if it, you know, lasts you another, you know, three extra years? If it's driving you to a dead end, then you're just wasting 3 years driving to that dead end, right? Like, why waste your time doing that?
Yeah, and this is making me think of another pivot that I was a part of. So I was a part of this really cool company called ShareFile. It was acquired by Citrix. And the founder there is a great guy, super successful entrepreneur. Jesse, you know him, your friends. He's awesome. And I remember there was this time during the company's growth where we would require a credit card for free trials, and that would automatically convert. Well, there became this question later on as we were looking at those trials and how they converted and the ultimate, you know, customer complaints and refunds and things like that that happened. It was not an insignificant amount of revenue for people who didn't come in and complain or whatever, but the usage wasn't there, wasn't a real customer. And so we were looking at this and we were thinking through the concept of good revenue versus bad revenue. Good revenue being healthy revenue that's productive for the company, for the customer. You're trading it for something in value. There's a fair trade going on. Bad revenue being this revenue that's either dragging you down from a company perspective, or there's not a fair trade in value and it makes the company's metrics and the function, the way that it functions as a business look really bad. And that was what was going on with these free trials that required a credit card. And so ultimately the decision was made that we were going to stop doing that because it wasn't good for us as a company. It wasn't good for the customer, but it was a very hard decision to make because we depended on that, you know, multi-million dollar line of revenue that was coming in month over month.
Yeah, it's and it all comes back to, I think that I love that word goal. And so I'm going to throw it back up there because know your goals, know what you're trying to accomplish. And that's going to help you solve problems better than anything else. One of the things I always try to advise entrepreneurs, when they come to talk to me, the first thing I always say is like, listen, I'm not going to tell you whether or not I think your idea is a good idea or a bad idea. And bad mentors do that. And we would be bad if we were on here and said, you know, here's how to do X. What a good mentor does is they're going to come and say, hey, you need to figure out your goal. And once you know your goal, every other decision becomes easier. Not, it doesn't mean that they're not hard decisions, but at least you can make the decision. And so, again, if you're leading that company that's getting kind of all this bad revenue, and you say, well, okay, what is our goal? Well, our goal is to, you know, just get as much cash from people as possible in the short term, because this is all a giant scam anyway, and we know this isn't going to last. Well, you know, and that's, I'm not saying it's a good or bad goal, good goal or bad goal. That's your goal. Then you say, okay, well, then we should probably keep doing this. But if your goal is like, well, we want to build a, you know, long-term sustainable company that's going to have meaningful value to our customers, then you can look at that and say, well, this is not it. And so, yeah, even though it hurts, it's not going to get us to where we want to be. And, you know, and if we fail because of that, well, then at least we failed doing what we were trying to do to achieve our goal. You know, and that's, again, that's the important thing.
Yeah, and really the thing that you're layering in here that's going unsaid, but I think is present in this conversation, is you've also got to understand your values. And it's so important to understand your values as an entrepreneur, because that is how you ultimately make these decisions, right? To, you can imagine the values that somebody like Jesse had to have in order to say, hey, I understand that this is making the company money, but we're going to shut it down because it's just not the right direction. It's not the right thing to do. That is inherently a value, which I think is a really powerful thing. And that goes into a lot of leadership discussions as you're talking about with your team about pivoting, because inevitably, if you pivot, that could potentially mean that a part of your company is no longer going to be aligned with the direction that you need to go. And what does that usually mean? That usually means layoffs. People have to be fired. And so your values and how you look at that and how you shepherd your team during that period of time really is dependent on those values. And I'm not saying by way that, like, you know, you shouldn't pivot for one reason or another based on having to lay off a division or company. That's just the unfortunate reality of running a business, is sometimes cash is running out. Sometimes you have to shut down a product line because it's not working out, whatever the case may be. And unfortunately, the people that are working on that product line or in that business will be impacted by that. But there are ways to do that that are, you know, within a certain value set, whatever that is for you. I know, like, when you and I talk, like, you try to take as much care and give as much time as you can to people in order to help them find their next step in those situations. But there's a lot more to pivoting than just, is it strategically important from a product perspective? You have to also look internally at the company and figure out, okay, well, if I've got to do this, you know, who can I repurpose into other areas of the business, and who is no longer going to be aligned with the direction that we're going.
And, you know, and for all our listeners out there, this is why Chris is going to be my partner on this podcast for another 3 to 4 months as I try to find a better replacement. So, you know, we're slow. We're slowly transitioning him out. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Stick with me.
I mean, we always knew that you were the star of the show, Dr. Goody.
I bring the pizzazz. I think this is a great spot to think about kind of pivots. And I know it seems like we wandered away from pivots, but I think you did a great job bringing it back there to the core of this, which is actually whether or not to pivot is still a value choice. And by the way, when I was a 20-something entrepreneur, and if I heard a couple like 40-something entrepreneurs, or you're like 60, right, Chris? Well, anyway. Sorry, I'm just being mean to you. He's younger than me. But you know, misery loves company. So, but you know, if I heard a couple of kind of older entrepreneurs saying, oh, values are the thing when I'm just trying to survive, I'm just trying desperately to raise some money, trying to get someone to pay attention to me, I would be like, ah, shut up. But here's the thing, ask, you know, why are you trying to, you know, desperately to raise that money? Why are you trying to get those customers? Why are you trying to build a big business? And it, you know, if the answer is you're trying to build a big business because if it's for the wrong reasons, I was trying to build big businesses because I wanted to be a big old fancy successful entrepreneur that could run around and say, look at me, and I was on the cover of Forbes or whatever it was. And that was not the right reason to be doing it. And eventually I outgrew that. And I started understanding that the core of entrepreneurship is not about you. It is about your audience, about your customer. And I had a student in with my in office hours just with me just a couple days ago. And it was so funny. This is, you know, this maybe 19, 20-year-old guy. And he's got this podcast. He's doing. And by the way, some of the guests he has on his podcast are I was jealous of some of the guests on his podcast. That's and awesome. And he's not getting any traction. He's like, I don't get it. Why am I not getting any traction? I go, okay, well, you know, what's your goal? Why are you doing this podcast? What are you trying to convey to your audience? It's like, well, you know, I think I have a really interesting story. You know, I came from this kind of hard life, but I managed to accomplish this, that, and the other thing. And now I'm going to talk to these other people. And, you know, it's, you know, it's really cool. And I said, well, there's your problem. Not once in the 3 minutes you just told me why you're doing this podcast, did you ever mention I'm doing this to create value for my listeners? It was all about you. And honestly, you don't create value for your listeners. And so entrepreneurship is always, always, always about creating value for other people. And the second you make it about you, you fail. So always make it about other people. Pivot is the same thing, right? You don't pivot for yourself. You pivot because that's how you're going to solve the problem the best. And so that really fundamentally what it comes down to. Are you doing a decision that's going to create value for the people you're trying to help? If yes, continue. If no, don't.
So are we bringing value with this ThoughtWave podcast, Dr. D?
I think we got there at the end.
Are we been focused enough on our customer today?
I got chills at the end. Wait, that's the opposite of what I just said, which is...
Oh, you got chills. Did you just fail because you made it about you?
I gave myself chills and therefore I created value for myself. But, you know, well, here's, you know, so here's where, and this is a great kind of way of kind of wrapping up this conversation, which is, so we talk about have goals and then deliver value. Well, so my goal with this podcast, and I imagine it's yours too, is to create meaningful value for the audience. So, you know, so long as we have these conversations and we feel like that, you know, anyone who's willing to listen is going to walk away getting value, even if it's only 10, 15, 20 people, and that's enough value in the world, then fine. And if it's 15, 20,000 people, cool, that's fine. But the goal is, as long as we're creating meaningful value for them and they're listening because they're going to come away from this podcast and they're going to be more successful entrepreneurs and founders, then they're good. I know it's weird to say, but I don't want to get to a point where like the podcast people are here because they want to hear us. And I'm not saying that we'll ever get to the point, but that's not the point of doing this. This is about creating value for our listeners. So I hope we did that for you if you're listening.
I hope so too. I think that's perfect. And you know, we're all listening to this because we're entrepreneurs. We want to figure out how to build our businesses better, more efficiently. We want to figure out the tips, tricks, and hacks to build audiences and to build successful businesses. And today, going through, you know, I learned something. Going through and thinking about the, defensive pivot, the offensive pivot, the squirrel pivot was super helpful way of framing, you know, what are the different types of things that you got to watch out for, and how do you know when you're on the right track and maybe a little bit off track there. So I learned something.
Now follow us on Blue Sky, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, especially Blue Sky. All right. Well, we'll see you next time. Please like, follow, subscribe. And if this did, in fact, help you, please send it out to your friends, family, and other entrepreneurs you think might be helped by this. Thank you, Dr. Dinan. I appreciate you. We'll see you next week.